Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Rick Bucher, Bleacher Report, of course, Mad Dog Radio, NBA Radio on Sirius XM. Rick, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing well. Stanley Cup lined up. We got the two conference finals that we thought might be disappointing are certainly not disappointing now. So, and we got a holiday weekend coming up. I think I don't speak for myself. I think I speak for America. We're in a very good place.
Yeah, on those fronts, certainly, no doubt about it. It is a great weekend. And you know,
you're not going to go North Korea on me, are you?
What do you mean?
Well, you were suggesting that we weren't good on all fronts, and I just assumed you were suddenly going to bring in some political angle.
Well, we're certainly not good on all fronts, Rick, in my opinion. But on the fronts you brought up, we are in good shape. I agree.
That's fair. Yeah. Fair. Well said. Fair enough.
You know, you bring up the Easter, well, both of these series, and this series is 3-2. It's a surprise to most people here. I picked the Cavs in six, but a lot of people were picking the Cavs in a sweep and domination. But what's interesting, the series, while close, has been terrible because all five games have been absolutely one-sided. Is it feels right now like it's all about the home court, like that's the most important thing, and that seems crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know whether you want to look at the home court. By the way, I had the Celtics in six, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And I'm not feeling good about that prediction, actually, right now. I think there's a great chance that we're going to go seven one way or the other. But I feel as if a lot of this has to do, whether you want to look at the home court or the connection between home court and three-point shooting, and I haven't broken it down in this particular series game by game, but I feel as if, and sometimes it can be a little deceiving in terms of when big three-point shots are made. Throughout these playoffs, I think we've seen a lot of wild swings, or we've seen lopsided scores. And I just believe it's a reflection of the impact of three-point shooting, and that it can create a lead in a blink, and then the response is, well, we need to shoot threes to get back into this, and that, if you're not hitting them, leads to long rebounds, leads to runouts, leads to that margin being doubled, and it gets to a point where you just, you know, what do we do now? How do we? The general thought is you chip away at it, but teams aren't really built anymore to chip away at deficits, and so. I think some of it, and keep in mind, I think part of it can be the home court, just because while we have various players in these playoffs that have playoff experience, we got a lot of key players that don't. You know, whether it's the depth of the Cavs in searching for a couple guys who can add to the equation, or it's the Celtics and riding a guy like a Jason Tatum or even a Terry Rozier who didn't play this kind of a role when he was in the playoffs last time around, or Jaylen Brown. I think that's some of it too. It's just these teams are built on very fragile combinations, and the influence and the comfort of being at home, whether it's shooting threes or just playing overall, is having a huge influence.
Rick, do you feel like Ty Lue is just getting schooled up here by Brad Stevens?
I don't. I really don't, because this is one of the reasons why I picked the Celtics in six. If you asked me, and this is, people are going to take this as a knock on LeBron, it's really not. If you asked me which roster I would want to coach, I would want to coach the Celtics, because you have more versatility, you have more athleticism, you have more malleable players that if I'm coaching, I can have a greater influence on it. I think the one thing that Ty Lue has working against him, and now it seems as if it's open season, we're looking for reasons to say that he's not doing a good job, is you can't coach effort and energy. And he has some guys that he has to rely on, including LeBron at times, where it's effort and energy. And at this point, you can't be coaching that in the conference finals. It can't be like I can't. It's not my job as the coach to reach you to make you understand how important this quarter is, or this possession is, or this game is. And so I think he's working against a couple of things. And I also, just looking at him and knowing what he's gone through this year, I just wonder that. I know we don't like to make excuses. I just wonder where he is health-wise. He doesn't look healthy to me. And I saw Steve Kerr. We didn't talk about it at the time. We didn't really know about it at the time. But when they lost in the series against the Cavs in the finals, I mean, we know now kind of what he was going through on a day-to-day basis. You think with all the decisions you have to make and the split-second decisions you have to make and decisions in the moment under pressure that you have to make, if you're not right physically, I can see where that would have an impact on your coaching decisions in the moment.
We're talking with Rick Bucher, Bleacher Report, SiriusXM NBA Radio. Rick, I agree with all you said there. I think Stevens maybe given a little too much credit, even though he's great.
Oh, 100%.
Right?
100%. By the way, can we just look at last night's game? I mean, they ran two plays down the stretch, because this is why I'm not, I think that the Cavs still have a great chance of winning this game in seven. Down the stretch, when they were looking to hold the Cavs at bay, they had about five consecutive possessions that were some of the worst offensive possessions I've ever seen. Yep. Posting up Horford, trying to get Rozier loose. They were terrible. The spacing was terrible. If we're going to give him credit for the things that we give him credit for, then we have to take a long look at that and go, what the hell was going on there? How come you didn't have them set up better than that?
No doubt. 100%. There's things you can criticize him for. There's things you can compliment him for. And all the stuff you said about Ty Lue is fair. I think the problem becomes when, like, he says that all the analytics say that Tristan Thompson should play against the Celtics, and then he doesn't play him because they won the last series that way. Or he says, well, I didn't play Kyle Korver because Ogilvy wasn't in the game. Those things really make you go, what is he talking about?
Yeah, no, I agree. He said some things that are some real head scratchers, and I have no way of defending them other than this, which is it's really easy from our perch to be able to look at it and go, what do you mean by that, or what was that? And I think there's a lot of decisions made in the heat of the moment where it's a feel thing. It's looking at the team, it's looking at the combination, it's looking at what do we need in this given moment, and making decisions. And they may not always be right, but it's like after the fact trying to. I think the hardest thing for coaches when they have a multitude of things to deal with. And let's face it, he's coaching two different teams here, right? I mean, he's coaching the old guard, and he's coaching the new guard, but he's got to find a way to meld those two against a team that is far more, I would say, seamless. Like, Brad's not up against the same thing.
That's
and
true.
So this is the one out I will give him, is that I think sometimes there are decisions made and then trying to explain what was going on in your head at any given moment when you made it is really difficult to do. And let's just say he's done a really poor job of it.
I think for the first time last night, Rick, LeBron, to me, looked exhausted. He's played the second most games ever in his career, 99 games already in this season, and it's wearing on him, I think. And that's my concern. Like, I assume the Cavs will win Game 6, and he can always have a shot with LeBron in Game 7. But, boy, man, he looked exhausted.
Yeah, I mean, at times he did. I don't know what to do with that. Like, he did. My question would be, why?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Is it because he's old?
Yeah, well, and that's the thing for me. I've read nothing about how he's learned how to rest. I've seen games along this stretch. I would think that there would be a cumulative effect. We would see, like, a deterioration. But the way he played in Game 4 was, to me, the ideal LeBron James game, which is I'm going to be aggressive early in the clock, and that's going to open things up for everybody else. I don't have to score every point, which is what he tried in the first quarter of Game 3. But I do need to be aggressive, and I need to be aggressive early. And the truth is, he wasn't aggressive early, in the clock or otherwise. There was way too many times he gets switched up on Aaron Baines, and he's measuring it, and he's jab-step. We've seen this LeBron James before. Jab-step, okay, I'll go by him. Or this time, jab-step, I'll. But it wasn't, the decisions weren't made quickly. If he had done that for a second game in a row and he looked exhausted, I'd say, okay, I would understand it better. Or if I didn't have these games where he looks, you know, we get all the stories about it's amazing, he's the most conditioned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we get a game that you're like, okay, what the hell happened? He fell off a cliff. And I really don't have an explanation for it, but it's really difficult for me to say, well, you know, it's 15 seasons and he's 33 years old. And I'm like, okay, but just a game ago, it was way different. And he's too much of a, he's seen it all. He's done it all. You can't, I'm not giving him the home court versus the away court
right.
explanation for those performances. He's proved otherwise. I can't. So I'm at a loss to explain this other than I will say this. Throughout his career, there have been times, I know you guys have seen it, we've been mystified. Wasn't just, by this season, we turned 33 or whatever it is, or this postseason. There have been various times where we thought, hell, we thought about it in December and January, didn't we?
Yes.
Like, what's up with LeBron, right?
Yep.
And I think this is what creates the crux of difficulty in trying to fully appreciate what LeBron is and where the criticism comes in, which is he's the one player on his level that I feel as if he decides when he's going to give it to us. Like there, and you know what? And if it was a calculated, I want to play great for 15 seasons, I want to go to the finals every year. If he said this is strategic, I'd be, dude, you're smarter than everybody else because there's plenty of guys who just went to the wall every single game, every single year, and they didn't accomplish what you did. Yeah, you are amazing. But he doesn't do that. He says, I give you 100% every game. And I'm like, don't tell me that because I don't see that.
Right.
And so that's where the dilemma comes in appreciating what LeBron is and then answering questions like the one we just discussed.
Rick Bucher is with us. Rick, let's talk about the Warriors and Rockets for a minute because I thought the Warriors would win in five, but
yep.
And I'm wrong about that. But I'm convinced the Warriors are going to smoke the Rockets tonight. My partner thinks the Rockets are going to win. What was your prediction going into the series, and what do you think is going to happen the rest of the way?
I thought that it was. I was kind of loosey goosey on the West because I didn't have to actually write it down. I thought the Warriors would win. I thought it would go six or seven games,
okay.
Largely because the Rockets. It's not a mirage what they were during the regular season, and the Warriors have done this consistently, and they did it against lesser teams. You know, they've been giving away games here and there. And I don't believe it's overconfidence. I believe it is the wear and tear collectively of going to four consecutive NBA finals. And they just, whether it's mentally, physically, whatever it might be, they dial it back when they think they can because they need to have the absolute pressure on them. Now, the other part is that this team is a lot thinner. That's not any news to anybody. Most people know it. They need to have their first seven guys right, and they need to have those first seven operating at maximum ability for them to be the dominant team that we expect them to be. Anything less than that, and they are vulnerable. So I'll be interested to see tonight what they're able to come with, especially Andre Iguodala, game time decision. If he doesn't play, like, Jordan Bell hasn't been able to give him anything. Kevon Looney has given them a little bit. But, you know, outside of that, if they don't have Iguodala and Livingston coming off the bench and playing close to their maximum ability, and the first five are not playing where they're moving and sharing the ball, and Steph is a factor, or at least mildly effective at both ends, that's where they're vulnerable. And so, again, this then goes to the Rockets. You know, it's hard for me to buy into the Rockets because, you know, James Harden was strangely invisible at times in the last game. And closing out a series becomes a whole different thing. We saw that with Boston in the game last night. Suddenly there's a different pressure and requires a different level of aggression, you know, controlled aggression. I need to see the Rockets that they're capable of doing that. I know the Warriors are when they're right. And so that's why I'm still leaning in the Warriors' direction. I would not be surprised. I'd say right now I'm expecting them to win tonight, and I'm expecting them to win in six.
Rick, last thing. I've been very critical on this show of Dan Gilbert. I give him credit for spending money. I'll give him that in the last couple of years. But besides that, I think he's a lousy owner. I think he oversteps. I think he was cheap with David Griffin, and that was a huge mistake. You know, the way he's cycled through coaches and cycled through GMs. I his relationship with LeBron. And listen, LeBron takes some blame the way he did it. But in the end, LeBron had the right to go, and Dan Gilbert probably still would have been ticked. Is that fair to criticize and be critical of Dan Gilbert?
Yes, it is, because you're a talk show radio host, and we all have that. We all carry that card. It's our job to do that. But I would say there are a lot of things that Dan has done that deserve that criticism. I also would say, and in the way that he's run the franchise, there's a lot of things that I think you and I wouldn't do and we wish Dan hadn't done, and I think it would be better for Dan if he hadn't done them. That said, the success of the Cavs, what they were previously, what he's made them into, it's hard for me to look at the overall picture and say he's been a minus as opposed to a plus. I think when you take it all in, you have to say that Dan Gilbert has been good for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he's been good for the city of Cleveland. And what he's done in the midst of that, the fact that he hasn't always fully taken advantage of the fact that you had one of the greatest players born and raised in your backyard and left, but, you know, had a need to come back and set things right because of how he's built. We can get into that. I think it's fair to criticize all of that, but I think it has to come with an understanding that, with all that said, I can think of probably about 10, 12, maybe 15 teams in the league that would have loved to have had a Dan Gilbert do for their franchise what he's done for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Rick, we'll leave it there. Appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
You got it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.